Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, Zach Ostrom here, IU Insider, Indianapolis Star. This is Mind Your Banners for Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. He's Mike Nieslick, Bloomington Herald Times. A lot going on. Mike, I guess let's launch in with the question that I know everybody is looking to answer. Everybody wants your answer to. Who's going to win Little Five?
Which one, the women's or the men's? I don't know.
Give me the women's first, then the men's.
What was their team? I just wrote this up and I can't
remember. Come on.
I know. This is good.
You need your expert predictions. They're not ready. Come on.
What's your team name? What's your team?
Phi Kappa Psi is the team that I hope.
They are not winning. Let's see.
All right. We'll see.
Let's go with Kappa Alpha Theta for the women's. And Sigma Phi Epsilon for the men. How do you like
Did
that?
Did you just pick the series winners?
They did win.
Yes. Yeah, you just picked the spring series winners. That's very unimaginative. It's going on the bulletin board right now. Anyway.
Sigma Phi Epsilon also had the top qualifying time. This year.
That is the least important of all the spring events.
So they've got all the jerseys.
I forgot to ask.
Do you get to pick them? Because you get the green or the white. Do you get to choose which one you want?
Well, that's sort of been race director discretion in the past. You would rather have the white jersey. It's the one that you earn. It's the one that signifies.
So they choose, but if they like the color green, what if the green?
Well, sure, but like I think if put it this way. You know, as somebody who's worn the green jersey before, if we'd won the spring series and we were nowhere near winning it, but if we'd won the spring series, we would have chosen the white jersey because the white jersey signifies a level of sort of like team, like team success.
Yes.
And I've known, you know, teams that won the race the year before, which means they get the yellow jersey. But then they win the spring series, and so they want to wear the white jersey. And I've known race directors who've told them, "No, you have to wear the yellow jersey because
you can't run the gold jersey."
It's yellow. It's not gold. Okay, please. It's yellow. It's yellow.
Gold.
No. No.
So what? Do you know what color jersey? Because I asked you, I think last week you did not know what jerseys you had.
Red. We're red. We have solid red jerseys.
Was that because of Liverpool?
No. Yes, the entire house. It's just huge fans. No, we wear red whenever we can. So it's preferred. If obviously you can't have one of the ones, you know, we were in the green jersey a couple of years ago. But anyway, let's move on to the thing that people are talking about almost as much.
Trent Holland.
As your little 500 predictions. Indiana has been quite active in the last, I would say, 7 days in the transfer portal, really about 5 days. It hasn't been a surprise. You know, we talked about this a little bit last week. We said this is going to be like a breakneck time, not just for Indiana, but for schools across the country, visitors coming in and out, you know, visit plans changing as guys commit, as, you know, priorities change and needs get filled. I guess let's start with the two that Indiana's taken. Miles Rice commits over the weekend. Really, really good point guard out of Washington State, was Pac-12 Freshman of the Year last year. Then Umar Ballo, the center from Arizona, very recognizable player. I think two-time first-team All-Pac-12, you know, pound for pound, one of the best rebounders at both ends of the floor across the last two seasons in the country. Obviously very much an out-and-out center, a different kind of center to Khalil Ware or even Trace Jackson Davis. But when you had, you know, seven open scholarships, or six once you count in Bryson Tucker, the freshman McDonald's All-American who committed, and B needs, you know, pretty much up and down your roster, whether they're, you know, you need starters, you need reserves, whatever. You know, Indiana probably couldn't have asked for a much better start than what it's done so far in the portal.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what the guys are ranked, I mean, I hesitate to sort of say like, is it a win yet? Because based on how the roster will be constructed, like, I mean, I read your insider piece and kind of talking about Bello, and just what kind of player he is, and looking at Miles Rice's kind of where he's his strengths to his game. I think the conspicuous thing that's still lacking is 3-point shooting. I mean, Arizona was a really good 3-point shooting team the last 2 years, shot more than 7 per game than Indiana did last year, made about 40% better last year, shot about closer to what 37, 38% the year before. Does Indiana have the guys to space the floor? And so I hesitate to say like this is a great start, like because they need shooting. And if they don't shoot anymore, if they don't add any shooters like they did last year, doesn't this feel like just you're running the same, I mean, running into the same brick wall, essentially.
To some extent, I think, I mean, like, Ballo is obviously his own thing. And clearly, we kind of questioned, like, would Indiana try Malik Renu at the five? There were some advantages to that. Frankly, there would be some disadvantages to that. It just sort of seems clear that Mike Woodson wants that big. Like, he wants that
Yeah, I mean,
presence.
this
Now,
news before.
what I would say is, based on the current complexion of things, and this can always change, but I wouldn't be shocked if Indiana, which kind of played, seemed at least to want to play more of a four big rotation last season, was in more of a three big kind of rotation this season. And some of the guys, whether it's like a Ben Humrichus, or I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, or Elijah Malone, some of the guys that Indiana's targeting maybe for that sort of backup big spot are a little bit more versatile, at least in terms of their profile, maybe can shoot a little
I'm
bit.
saying, I mean, you're going to play Bello a bit.
No,
I mean,
but I
you're going
think,
to get the
but
majority of the
I
minutes.
was getting there.
Let's go, man.
I think the other thing you need is just playmaking ability. Like, I think that, we talked about shooting and that was a big part of it, but we also talked about how many times the offense would go stale because there was just nobody who could beat the man in front of them. Or, I mean, absent Trey Galloway's sort of late season,
But my
emergence,
counterpoint to that,
there was just nobody that could run the
yeah.
pick and roll stuff at all. So, I mean, you had, for example, a player in Mackenzie Mbako that shot close to 38% from three in Big Ten play, but it took Indiana way too long to figure out how to get him the shots he needed essentially within the
But
fourth
I guess
quarter.
the counterpoint is that if Galloway doesn't improve his 3-point shooting, and Rice is kind of the guy, and they're the backcourt, right? And your backcourt shooting less than maybe 32%, 33% from
I
three.
mean, Indiana is targeting some other dudes though that may start over Trey Galloway.
Maybe, but I'm saying let's go by the roster right now. It's like I sat next to a guy that banged his head on the table game after game because they didn't have volume 3-point shooters and said this is the death of basketball. And it's like this seems like another roster that's going to have that same. I mean, as of right now, obviously they could add some players, but I mean, it's going to take some work. I mean, they're going to add three shooters, two shooters, because like the lineup right they have right now, Mackenzie Mbako is your best three-point shooter by far, right? And is that enough to sort of counterbalance what you said? I mean, because you've seen the teams. I mean, they just launched three-pointers, and Indiana cannot keep up. And it seems like this lineup will be very similar. They'll be maybe better offensively because, like you said, the playmaking will be better, but can they close the gap with not being able to shoot a three then?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't deny Indiana still needs shooters. And you look at someone like Kanan Carlisle, who is scheduled to visit this weekend. He shot literally 32 of 100. So he thought shot the cleanest 32% from three you can imagine. That was as a freshman. I think there's probably a bit of an argument that if you pull him out of an offense that needs him to make plays on the ball so much and maybe asks him to spot up a little bit more, then that number probably improves, especially if you've also got good point guard play creating those shots for him, probably better than what he had around him at Stanford. Connor Asigian, as we speak, my understanding is he's on campus, the I guess rising junior, if you want to say, from Wisconsin. He went to Central Noble High School up around Fort Wayne, shot about 36% from three as a freshman, had a back injury last year. His numbers dipped to, 30.3%, and he really, I mean, his
None of
volume
these
dipped.
are good. You said they're, I mean, these are not good, great numbers.
Well, I think with Asigian, basically, if your belief is that the injury was what caused the shooting dip, then you can, you know, you and I don't think he necessarily starts, but I think that then, you know, and listen, this is all fantasy football. Like, we're all just sort of like, this is what happens in the portal. You say, well, we're going to take all these guys, and suddenly, you know, you look around and fans have constructed rosters that have like 18 scholarship players. But I
But don't
listen,
you think
I
like a
don't
player
expect Indiana, I don't
like a
expect
player
Indiana to
like
take like, you know, 45+% 3-point shooters, if that's what you're asking. I
No, I
do.
think they need at least one though. Like Hickman would have made sense, right?
Yeah.
Like Hickman
And I
would have
think
made more
Esiason
sense
and
than
Hickman are probably being sort of, I would argue, without, obviously I'm not sitting in on meetings with the staff and things like that. I would guess Esiason and Hickman were probably being pitched similar roles.
But Hickman's, I mean, but wouldn't you want the more proven shooter if you're Indiana at this point? Like you need a
Oh, no
proven
doubt, but Connor
three-point
Hickman
shooter.
went to Cincinnati, so now you got to move on. I mean,
No, I know, but I'm saying like that like based but my point is like I would go in, all in on a guy that shot a 40% in a season on 3-point range versus a guy that maybe had a more vast skill set. As you know what I'm saying? Like I would target my focus would be less on sort of you've got enough versatility, I think, on the players you have. Because I mean, you're not playing. Because with the five you got, and then what? Tucker comes off the bench. He's six, and then you've got backup guards already in place with Gabe Cupps and Anthony Leal. Like you need that shooter, and that should be your primary target. Like that's the guy, right?
well, so here's the other question, and I'm just, I mean, like, I wondered for a little while why Indiana was going so hard after such a clear-cut pick and roll point guard, you know, beyond the fact that just like Miles Rice is a really good player. And then like it occurred to me that nobody ever really clearly outlined what was wrong with Trey Galloway at the end of last season, other than that it was his knee. And, you know, I think if memory serves, I asked him pretty directly in the locker room in Minneapolis whether he'd need surgery, and he kind of wouldn't talk about it. My point is, there may also be an extent to which you're recruiting around the idea that not necessarily anything you get from Trey Galloway is a bonus, but that you don't want to wind up in a situation like you did last year, or arguably even 2 years ago, where you had this big role carved out for a guy, and you then watched him get hurt, lose the bulk of the season, and not really be able to sort of replace that. And even, I think it's probably fair to say, when Xavier Johnson got back from his injury, he never really found his rhythm. We never saw the player that maybe Indiana had from, like, you know, early February to the end of November 2022. You know, that I wonder if there's also an extent to which you're sort of looking at Trey Galloway and saying, if that knee injury did require surgery, and that's probably something we will find out in the future, but even if it didn't, it's still a knee injury. Like, it's still a concern. Is there an extent to which you're almost sort of trying to backload for the idea that you don't put yourself in a position where one guy getting hurt the way Xavier Johnson did last year just completely depletes your backcourt? Talk for a little while here. I got to go let my dog in. I'll be right back.
What? You're abandoning the pot. So he's literally abandoning. Can we just edit this out? Like, I'm gonna get a vamp. And what are those cans? You got two cans of those beer, empty beer cans. I don't know if this will be posted on video. He's got beer cans in the background, very orange or energy drinks. I'm not really sure which. This is not good. This is not good podcasting. Poor planning on Zach's Mind Your Banners. The brain trust here to not let your dog in ahead of time. Terrible. Terrible form. It's like a rookie mistake. So the question was, the audience was asking, are those beer cans or energy drinks behind you?
These are the Waterloo seltzers. It's tasty seltzer.
Seltzer. But no, you've done, you know what
Tastes
you've
like
done? I think you've seen your comparison to Purdue. I mean, the reason they need like
varsity.
a Mason Gillis type of player that just can come off the bench, shoot 2 3-pointers, make 2 3-pointers a game. And they don't have that. I mean, they don't have it in the starting lineup, let alone the bench. And I get not putting all your eggs on like one shooter, but then to still not shoot, I mean, I don't know. I'm just hesitant, like, look, like I said, there was this person in my ear all season long about the importance of 3-point shooting and what the decade and a half lull, how this has ruined Indiana
Decade and a
basketball.
half.
How important. And so maybe that's sort of where I'm at with it in terms of constructing the roster. And because Woodson, as good as he's been at times, sort of making the pieces all fit, his roster construction has sometimes been a little wonky.
No, I think that's fair, and I'm not sitting here saying, "Hey, look, it's UConn, but in an Indiana jersey." I do think that broadly speaking,
They're more, I mean, Miles Rice alone makes them more dynamic, probably, and especially healthy. But I'm
and
saying, does
while
the team
Khalel, while
work
you're
out?
losing something, obviously with Khalel Ware,
Right.
it's worth saying you're gaining something with Umar Ballo. Like Indiana has not been a very good rebounding team, frankly, either of the last 2 years. Despite the fact that it has had, statistically speaking, a really good rebounding center in Khalel Ware or Trayce Jackson-Davis. Umar Ballo, though, rebounds at a different level to either of them at both ends of the floor. I mean, he was top 10 in the Pac-12 each of the last 2 seasons in league play in offensive and defensive rebounding rate. Like he's just purely one of the best and most physical rebounders in the country. He's a better finisher around the rim than Ware or Jackson, even Jackson Davis, who obviously was a fantastic finisher himself. He is a physically dominant player. And so my point is the team, I don't think will be perfect. I think it will change. I also agree that I think Indiana is going to be, especially if you can add someone like Kanan Carlisle to Miles Rice, and maybe all my doom predicting about Trey Galloway doesn't wind up coming true, and then suddenly you have three guys that maybe have the ability to run a little offense, maybe in the case of someone like Carlisle, move off the ball and hit some threes. Maybe even if you take the ball out of Trey Galloway's hands and you can pare back some of his offensive role, maybe he can find a little bit of his 3-point shot again. And even if he gets up to like 34, 35% with some volume, that's a substantial change. But it's also you start to look at a roster that has, first of all, you bring up Mason Gillis. Well, if you only have three bigs, true bigs, and the one on your bench is maybe a little bit more flexible, can shoot the three a little bit, well, then you do kind of have Mason Gillis, or you have, if nothing else, the ability to remove one of those bigs, slide McKenzie Mbaku to the four, Bryson Tucker to the three, and then suddenly you are playing those lineups that Purdue ran out there a lot more that had either like Cam Heidi every once in a while, Fletcher Loyer or Miles Colvin at the three and Mason Gillis at the four. And listen, we kind of got to see Mike Woodson buy into that before we believe he's going to do it. But at the same time, if he doesn't add, multiple front court players behind Ballo and Renu by the time that we sort of close the book on this roster, then it won't be like a huge leap for us to say that's something he's planning on doing, because you just simply
You can't
can't
say that.
split 80 minutes among three bigs, especially when one of them's a little bit foul prone. And
Little bit.
well,
I
he's not as foul prone as he was his freshman year. He's gotten better, trust
mean,
me.
by the end of that last 10 game stretch, he was that
No,
last 10
that's fair. That's fair.
game stretch was it.
But either way, I guess what I'm saying is, number one, I think you start to feel like you are adding up an overall talent level that is better. Number two, I think you have a reasonable path to improvement in terms of 3-point shooting specifically from some of the guys involved, like a Carlisle, like potentially a Galloway, certainly McKenzie Mbaku. I mean, his Big Ten versus overall splits last year, he clearly found a shot as the season went on. And there's no reason really to believe that as long as he's healthy, it won't get even better next year. I don't expect Indiana to suddenly become the Warriors, but I just think that there's a very good chance that they will find they have more shooting than they did a year ago. And that at very least, it looks a little bit like it did in Woodson's second season, where they still didn't shoot a lot of threes very much at all. But they didn't make them, and they made them enough for the offense to have some capacity to it and have some urgency to it, or whatever you want to say. I just I think it is trending better, though the problem is not solved. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And I mean, it certainly depends on what they do. Obviously, like as of right now, I mean, there's this clear deficit. I mean, they could close that gap here with based on the additions that they make. Based on, I don't know, what's your take overall sort of the, you know, Mike Woodson, everybody's a fan now again, apparently, that the fan base is on board for a hot minute.
I wouldn't say everybody's a fan. I mean, I think there's always an extent to which like this stuff is just, there's always a prisoner of the moment element to this. And like, I've seen this with other coaches in Indiana too. And listen, obviously the other coaches I've covered in Indiana eventually lost their jobs. But I, you know, there's always an extent to which in the moment, you're always going to be sort of more frustrated and more easily carried away emotionally by what you're seeing than if you kind of pull back a little bit. And what I would say too is, you know, there was kind of this, you know, from that night that Indiana lost to Nebraska and word got around that IU was going to decline the NIT if invited and just like attack the portal and everything around sort of, we're going to retain Mike Woodson. We're going to go crazy in the spring recruiting cycle. There's going to be all of this additional NIL sort of resource in the pool for Woodson to go get the players that he wants and, you know, build a roster that maybe doesn't, I don't want to say cut corners, but has, you know, more sort of angles and dimensions to it. And, you know, maybe Indiana doesn't wind up getting outbid by somebody for this guy, or Indiana can be, you know, more decisive in this recruitment with this player or whatever. So far, and it's worth saying they've filled fewer than half of their available scholarships to, you know, the moment we're talking right now, 2:32 p.m., April 17th. So far, Indiana's kind of done what it said it was going to do. And I think that's probably part of it, too, is that people feel like they are seeing, you know, sort of promise followed by action. And there will be a level of skepticism that will only be sort of dispelled if we get to December and January and Indiana looks like a, you know, dramatically better team, looks like it can compete for a Big Ten title, looks like it could play to the second weekend of the tournament, et cetera. But for now, at least Indiana is, you know, Mike Woodson and by extension, Indiana are kind of making good on this sort of promise of this is how we're going to fix the problems that ultimately sunk last season.
If they do struggle, he will need to go to a different sort of talking point than inexperience, don't you think? Because he landed the transfers he landed are experienced. The core, they've got, you know, three, four starters. If you, I know Cups won't start next year, but four guys with starting experience.
They won't be as young. I mean, there still will be the element of like, can he get them to gel?
Right.
But, you know, you're trading Kalel Ware, who had 1 year in college, for Umar Balu, who has four. You know, you were starting Gabe Cups when Xavier Johnson was injured last season, and, you know, Cups didn't do anything wrong necessarily. Mike Woodson said many times, we thought we were going to be able to limit his role more and let him develop. Didn't work out that way well. Now you're going to start Miles Rice, who was also technically a freshman last year, but that was his third year of college. He had a redshirt year. There's, you know, there's a level of experience and savvy and whatever else that he's going to bring to that. You know, they'll still be young together. There were those two statistics that I cited last year. One was just Division I experience. The other was minutes continuity. Minutes continuity is still going to be kind of down. You know, maybe not to the extent.
I think it'll be higher than it was last year.
It'll be better than it was last year because you're not losing four starters. But it will still, you know, take a step back in the sense that Ware will be gone, Johnson will be gone, that bench will
be. But it won't be starting over like they did a year ago.
But and you're also not going to be in a situation, I don't think, we'll see where kind of the numbers settle out. As things are trending, I don't think you're going to be in a situation where guys are, you know, you're playing guys that just literally don't have a lot of experience at this level, that are only freshmen and sophomores, or have only played, you know, have only averaged such and such minutes per game. Or, you know, like in the case of, and I'm not picking on him, but in the case of Peyton Sparks, okay, he's a junior, but so much of his experience is at the MAC level, whereas Umar Balos comes to Indiana with two Pac-12 title rings. You know, Miles Rice was in the second round of the NCAA tournament last year with Washington State. So no, they will be young in some ways, but not nearly to the extent that they were last season, either in years or in collective
experience. I mean, because I just think that there should be, regardless of what happens now, I mean, they should be a more fully formed roster or unit, I guess I would say, by the time week one or game one comes around.
I think that's fair. And I also think, like, I mean, you know, this is again where it goes back to, you felt like you saw a certain emergence from Anthony Leal and Trey Galloway, and we don't know what goes on behind the scenes in locker rooms and team meetings and stuff like that. But, like, at least to me, there was an outward, as last season wore on, sort of like visible assumption of leadership, not just from Galloway, who was a first year captain, but from Leal, who wasn't a captain, but was a fourth year player. And now you've got those two guys coming back. I've mentioned this story on the, mentioned this on the podcast before. I grew up in a family of Georgia Tech fans, and in 2004, when they went to the national championship game, their two captains were like their eighth and like 11th players in their rotation. But they were a fourth year player who'd been like Paul Hewitt's, I think, like first recruit at Georgia Tech, and a fifth year player who actually left the program at one point because like he needed to go basically help his family with something, but he came back. And essentially, they held the whole thing together. And nobody really realized it until the next year when Tech returned almost all of its core and was not nearly the same. And everyone basically admitted they never replaced that leadership, that they had those two guys that just held the locker room together, that kept everybody in on the same page and moving in the right direction and whatever. And when they lost those guys, nobody really stepped into that void. It feels like Galloway and Leal can be that for Indiana. Whatever their roles on the court, they can also be that for Indiana in terms of, you do have a team that's going to have to pull a lot of different pieces together, that's going to have to put some guys in different roles, et cetera. You know, those are two guys that seem invested not just in whatever happens on the court, but in the idea of being the ones that kind of glue all the pieces into place.
That's fair.
Yeah. So we're, I mean, well, I don't know. Like, I asked you this sort of generally at the beginning, and I feel like you didn't give me a firm answer. Like, what is your impression of Indiana's work to this point? Is it essentially just they still haven't gotten shooters?
Well, I mean, they've done well. I mean, you know, they've added, you know, two of the most. I mean, I think when you talk about when they've won recruiting battles against guys that, like you said, probably cost quite a bit of money, and they threw down and said, you know, here they're ours. And so, I mean, I think it speaks to the backing to the program, I think, more than anything else, that they were able to sort of win. I mean, I think, because based on what you've seen, I think, and I hope he's kind of driving the bus right now. And so, I mean, Indiana's in the front, right, in terms of basketball, at least. That they're able to do that and do that multiple times over, I think, should, you know, especially with a coach that is sort of on the hot seat, that should, from a fan perspective, that should instill some confidence sort of in the status of the program, even though the success on the court hasn't sort of been where they wanted, especially last year. In terms of how it all comes together, like you said, I don't know. Just because the way that the season went, the teams we saw have success against them, it was all just driven by three pointers. And so they haven't added that component yet. So I'm sort of leery to say, like, some of those games you still lose. I think it'll be interesting to see how the team schedules next year in terms of what that comes together. Like, is Mike Woodson going to want to sort of push this team like he did last year? And did he find that successful, or how that, the push and pull of that? Just because I think you want confidence going in the Big Ten. If they lose a bunch of games, are you facing a similar situation where the fan base is frustrated already by the conference season?
I am fascinated by Ballo because, like, Woodson has, and I know you've got a hard deadline here. We'll get you out in a couple minutes. Woodson has always seemed to value this sort of, you know, high productivity center. But Ballo is very different. I mean, Trace Jackson Davis was a remarkable post passer, and Woodson essentially built the entire offense around Jackson Davis, not just like get him the ball so he can score, but get him the ball because he'll.
And what you say his assist rate last year was really low, right?
Ballo's, yeah, it was like 5.5%, which, like, for comparison purposes, 2 years ago, I cite this a lot. 2 years ago, Trace Jackson Davis's Big Ten only assist rate was 28.7%. For comparison purposes, Yogi Ferrell's Big Ten only assist rate Never broke 28.4%, and Yogi Ferrell is the program's all-time assist leader. Now, different offenses, all that, but the point is that's how creative Jackson Davis could be from that you know sort of 4 or 5 spot, depending on how you want to classify where he got the ball. And then you had Khalil Ware, who obviously was not necessarily a distributor, but had so much sort of, you know, freedom to roam beyond the 3-point line, and you know Indiana used him in the short roll a lot and different stuff like that. Like Ballo is, I mean, he lives at both rims. You know, he's an elite rebounder. I wouldn't necessarily say he's an elite shot blocker, but I mean, he's 7'2", 260, and he doesn't get a ton of foul trouble. You can imagine, not unlike Zach Edey, the way he just kind of affects shots. And then around the rim, like he's just really, I mean, he's an elite finisher. And despite the fact that he doesn't always hit all of his free throws, he gets fouled at a rate that he sort of sometimes becomes one of those players that even if he shoots 60% on his free throws, like he just shoots so many of them, it becomes an impactful thing in the course of the game. So he's a completely different kind of five, is kind of my point here. And it will be interesting, I think, to see how Woodson, who really likes ball screen offense, who, you know, I think probably, it is probably fair to say, would rather not play too much drop coverage, though he's done it, you know, before, you know, how he schemes around a very different five than what he's had in the past. We can leave it there unless you have, you know, urgent thoughts on the spring game. I figured we'd maybe talk about that next week.
Your categorization of his free throw shooting, he shot less than 50%, I think, was
Well, 2 years ago, he shot 70%. So I think the question you have is basically...
But he only shot 2.6 per game. So,
yeah.
I mean...
Okay, yeah. But the question is, can you find a better intersection of efficiency and volume?
I just thought you were very generous when he said he made some. I mean...
I said even if he shoots 60%, which is basically halfway between his career mark and what he did last year.
Are you going to go back to your beers now?
These are my sparkling water, naturally flavored peach seltzers. I would love ones that just say they're unnaturally flavored.
You break these out like they're sponsoring the thing. You got these,
if they want to, I think they're fantastic. If they want to sponsor the podcast, I'm sure we have a lot of listeners at Waterloo, Sparkling Water Corp, Austin, Texas, zip code 78702. If they want to sponsor the podcast and also possibly pick me up some Franklin's barbecue and send it to Bloomington, we'll be happy to arrange that.
And the defunct, was it the defunct Subway that you had the hat for?
The what? It's right here. Yeah. I was going to put it on as a signal to you if we needed to shift topics, but we never did. So we'll recap the spring game next week. We'll probably have more transfer movement to talk about then. I think this stuff's going to keep happening fast for Indiana for a while. Wouldn't be shocked if you see maybe a couple more in the door, and then, like, let's say by the end of the weekend, early next week, and then maybe Indiana hits pause, takes a breath, reassesses kind of where the portal field is, who's entered it late maybe, what its needs have evolved into with some guys in the fold, and then kind of goes again. But he's Mike Nieslick. I'm Zach Osterman. For the Bloomington Herald Times, for the Indianapolis Star, this has been Mind Your Banners. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.